friends. Welcome to a brand new episode of Unboxing God with me, McCall. Since embarking on episode 3, I've been in deep thought on what really is prayer, and it's led to today's topic, what exactly is church? First, I'd like to share my thought journey on how I got from prayer to place. Then we'll dig a little deeper into alternative ideas of why church, where's church, and what's in a church. I have a dear friend that always tells me the words, yeah, but, are nothing but a dead end. They tear down everything that came before them, she says. To widen the scope a bit, this same idea can be applied to any mentor-mentee relationship, or teacher-student, or therapist-patient, or parent-child. In any relationship, really, where two people are working together, and one is leaning on another for some objectivity, or a new perspective, or even just some previously unconsidered wisdom, yeah, but, is like pulling the emergency brake on a car speeding down the highway. It simply shuts everything down and brings it to a grinding halt. Have you ever seen improv comedy? Now bear with me for a moment. Maybe you remember that old TV show from the 90s, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Or perhaps you've taken an improv class for yourself. If so, you might be familiar with some of the rules. Now I know it sounds counterintuitive to think of improvisation as having rules, and for the most part, you are correct. Improv, as a performance style, is very anything goes. In the world of live theater, there's really not much worse than bad improv. So in order to keep a show, a game, or a scene on the rails, improvisers will usually adhere to some basic principles. And chief among these is yes and. It's a basic rule that requires the players agree and build on what was given. If a performer steps out on the stage and declares to their scene partner, "You and I've been married for 15 years and now this?" They're establishing so much. The two on stage are married, they have been for 15 years, and now apparently something quite significant has occurred. Now, imagine possible replies to this initiation. How about, "But I just met you last night." Now, the audience may laugh at the surprise of such a response. One person believes they've been married for years, the other one says it was last night. Hilarious. Maybe. For the moment. But see, there's nowhere left to go. It's a dead end. And I guarantee the rest of that scene will be spent digging their way out of the hole created by the denial of that initial declaration. So how about a different response? One of yes and. Yes, and if we hadn't skipped the blood test, we might have known we were twins all this time. Yes, and before you say another word, I am well aware of the irony that you're married to a pyromaniac firefighter. Yes, and I wouldn't have believed you a reasonable candidate for the papacy either, my love. Yes by itself isn't enough. It's great. I mean, it agrees. But and is really required. And adds. Yes, I agree, and here's my contribution. I consider yes and to be a sort of prayer, a response to Waldo that says, I agree with you, and I'm going to do my part now. That message can be to your sponsor, to your mentor, therapist, parent. When someone that you've asked to help you provides it, is your response, yeah, but, the dead end? Or is it, yes, and, the path forward? Okay, now, let's take this idea one step further into where this or any other prayer might be best prayed. In the case of improv comedy, the yes and prayer, of course, happens in a theater. And I propose that theaters and many other places, really, provide us with that church space. How about a doctor working in an ER with their team? when a surgeon believes the heart monitor or leans on the image of an X-ray, are they not, in some loose way, trusting something more powerful than themselves in what could be considered a sacred space? In order to answer my own questions, I needed to learn a little bit more about what church is, what it provides universally, and create some sort of a matrix against which to apply various church-temple ideas to see if they hold up. My idea is that all of these places have three things in common. They are A, places of safety and support, B, belonging and community, and C, inspiration and growth. Places where we receive and give back to allow the sum to be greater than the individual parts or people. A place where people with some unifying interest or focus, a commonality, join together for the swapping of conceptual ideas as well as practical knowledge. A place where we are not only allowed, but encouraged to learn and make mistakes and trip and fall and get back up with a deeper understanding that we share with others so we can grow as individuals and as a community. A place where we are safe enough to take up more room than we tend to, and to be comforted and encouraged and inspired. A place of true belonging. Here are some ways that you can support Unboxing God that will make a significant difference. First of all, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend, share the link. Join our Facebook group. Become part of this special little community that we're creating by submitting your own shares and suggestions. Last but not least, you can always support this show financially. Supporters unlock secret bonuses like members-only Skype Q&As and more. Just go to anchor.fm/unboxinggod/support to choose one of the three support tiers. 99 cents, $4.99, or even $9.99. You'll get a special shout out like this. Hey, Kristen and Brittany, you freaking rock. And this episode is for you too. So thanks so much for your support. And I promise every cent received will go right back into making this show even better. Okay, I'm going to read something. It's from the churchofjesuschrist.org. But bear with me. Yes, this is Mormonism, but when I searched place of belonging on Google, this is what came up. And I found it really interesting. So if you have church hurt, fast forward a few seconds or take out some of the more offensive words to your ears, but try to be open to this idea and hear what's at the core of this quote. Every priesthood holder, regardless of his situation, benefits from a strong quorum. My young brothers who hold the Aaronic priesthood, the Lord would have you establish a strong quorum, a place of belonging for each and every young man, a place where the Lord's Spirit is present, a place where all quorum members are welcomed and valued. As the Lord gathers his children, they need a place to belong and grow. When there is limited support at home, priesthood quorums and other leaders and friends watch over and support each individual and family as needed. It is a place where we instruct each other, serve others, and build unity and brotherhood as we serve God. It is a place where miracles happen. Here's the thing about belonging. I've always understood addiction to be a disease of isolation, and isolation to be the antithesis of belonging. Now, for those of you who get turned on by scientific research and discoveries, buckle up, this part's for you. Experimental manipulations of social isolation in rats and mice are a common means of helping us to understand the effects of isolation on social animals in general. Researchers have proposed that raising rats in isolation is a valid model to explain the causes of mental illnesses in humans. Indeed, chronic social isolation in rats has been found to lead to depression, anxiety, and psychosis-like behaviors, as well as signs of autonomic, neuroendocrine, and metabolic dysregulation. For example, a systematic review found that social isolation in rats is associated with anxiety-like symptoms. And the opposite of isolation, to me, is a sense of belonging. Here's a quote taken from Psychology Today back in 2014. A sense of belonging is a human need, just like the need for food and shelter. Feeling that you belong is most important in seeing value in life and in coping with intensely painful emotions. A sense of belonging to a greater community improves your motivation, health, and happiness. Abraham Maslow suggested that the need to belong was a major source of human motivation. He thought it was one of the five human needs in his hierarchy of needs, along with physiological needs, safety, self-esteem, and self-actualization. These needs are arranged on a hierarchy and must be satisfied in order. After physiological and safety needs are met, an individual can then work on meeting the need to belong and to be loved. According to Maslow, if the first two needs are not met, then an individual cannot completely love someone else. Many theories have focused on the need to belong as a fundamental psychological motivation. The belongingness hypothesis suggests that people devote much of their cognitive thought process to interpersonal relationships and attachments. According to Roy Baumeister and Mark Leary, all human beings need a certain minimum quantity of regular, satisfying social interactions. Inability to meet this need results in loneliness, mental distress, and a strong desire to form new relationships. According to Baumeister and Leary, much of what human beings do is done in service of belongingness. They argue that many of the human needs that have been documented, such as the need for power, intimacy, approval, achievement, and affiliation, are all driven by the need to belong. Human culture is compelled and conditioned by pressure to belong. The need to belong and form attachments is universal amongst all humans. A number of studies have confirmed a strong link between belongingness and depressive symptoms using the Sense of Belonging Instrument's psychological measurement. This measurement scale contains 14 items that invoke the social world. For example, quote, "I don't feel there is any place I really fit in this world." End quote. The SOBI-P, for short, is intended to measure a general sense of belonging. Belongingness is the human emotional need to be an accepted member of a group. But church brings, for me, an additional level of responsibility for growth and learning, and a safe community in which to explore ourselves and our connections with others, especially with our higher powers. Social isolation can be a precipitating factor for suicidal behavior. A large body of literature suggests that individuals who experience isolation in their lives are more vulnerable to suicide than those who have strong social ties with others. In fact, there's a study that found social isolation to be amongst the most common risk factors identified by Australian men who have attempted suicide. Professor Ian Hickey of the University of Sydney says that social isolation was perhaps the most important factor contributing to male suicide attempts. Hickey said there was a wealth of evidence that men had more restricted social networks than women, and that those networks were heavily work-based. So, in light of this information, I've asked three men in my life to consider where they find belonging and to view that place as church with me, just as an experiment. We'll hear from my husband, Kyle, who has found that women's banked track roller derby most closely fits the criteria for church that I've proposed here. Also, my friend, Anthony, who is a motorcycle enthusiast and finds belonging within that niche and tight-knit community. Finally, we'll hear from my uncle, Scott, who's always been a sailor, and out on the water is where he most closely experiences connection with others and his own higher power.
Thanks, McCall, for this opportunity to share a bit about myself and where I find church. As a former believer, I really don't have any further interest in exploring organized religion. My experiences with church have left me pretty well satisfied that there's just nothing there for me anymore. However, that doesn't mean that I desire a community of connectedness any less, even taking into account my extreme introversion. Thankfully, I've discovered that roller derby provides a tremendous amount of church space type experiences for me. I'm a referee for a women's bank track roller derby league in Los Angeles, and we have both a juniors and adult league, and I ref for all of them. You mentioned a church should be a place of community. Derby has provided me with community by giving me a team to be a part of. We have a single team of referees, and it takes a lot of hard work and determination over a period of months to be trained and eventually drafted to the officiating crew. That experience has given me new and meaningful friendships that I cherish. You also said that church provides a place of learning and growth where it's safe to fall down. Now, obviously, I've learned a ton about the rules and strategy of roller derby, but I've grown in other ways too. As long as I can remember, I've loved roller skating. In my teen years, I spent every Friday night at the roller rink by myself, just skating. And I got to be okay, but I was never great. And one thing I never learned how to do was skate backwards. To me, it was almost this unattainable skill. I didn't understand how to do it, and I didn't really even understand how to learn how to do it. I was too self-conscious to try to skate backwards at the roller rink, and I didn't have my own skates to practice with anywhere else. However, perhaps the most demanding ref position in bank track roller derby is called the front pack referee. This position is responsible for skating ahead of the main pack of skaters and calling any penalties seen from that position. The most effective way to maintain the best visibility of the pack from ahead of it is to skate backwards. So the front pack ref skates backwards ahead of the pack and has to see and call penalties as they happen. Well, I wanted to be able to work every position on our crew, so I determined that at the age of 40, I had to finally learn how to skate backwards. And derby provided me a place to fall down, over and over and over, until I could finally do it. In addition, it gave me a community of people who supported my endeavor and wanted me to succeed. There was no longer an issue of how do you learn or who will teach you. I was surrounded by people who were eager and willing to share their experience to help me get better. I try to practice meditation and mindfulness in my daily life, and the whole concept of mindfulness is being in the moment. We all spend so much time living in the past or in the future, or just trapped in our heads listening to the endless parade of unbidden thoughts that really only serve to distract us from what's happening right now. It's incredibly difficult to achieve a quiet mind. However, we've all experienced moments of this clarity. For me, I am never more present, more in the moment, more absolutely focused on what I'm doing to the point that the rest of the world doesn't even exist than when I'm skating at full speed backwards, dialed in on the pack and watching for an arms penalty or low block. In fact, in those moments, I can actually physically do things that I cannot otherwise do. For instance, if the pack goes so fast that I just cannot keep up while skating backwards, I have to transition at top speed to skating forwards so I can regain my position ahead of them and then turn around again so I can still see them. And I have to do all of this in such a way that I never break visual contact with the skaters on the track. But here's the thing. I can't do that, even if I try. And I know this because I've tried. In a controlled setting, in warm-ups, or as part of a drill, I can't do it. But in-game, in the moment, my body just takes over and does it on its own, and my mind remains fully focused on what I'm looking at, and most importantly, if any of it qualifies as a penalty. Derby has given me friends and community, but also a space where I can become more than I was previously to achieve a lifelong goal and give me the feeling of being fully present in the moment, which drives me to want to experience that feeling away from the track in other areas of my life, which in turn drives me to be a better husband, a better father, and a better human. If that doesn't qualify as church, then I'm not interested. And if you're not getting that from your church, I would encourage you to consider why that is and explore if there might be somewhere else that could be a better investment of your time and energy.
Hi, this is Anthony. What do I think of when I think of church? It's an interesting idea. I was raised Catholic, traditionally, and it was there that I became uncomfortable in that idea of church. It was not a religion or a spirituality so much as the rules of man, not the rules of God. So as I've grown older and I've thought about it more, I found my church and my connection with my higher power, who I call God, when I ride my motorcycle. That's where I'm able to connect most closely to he or she. My God has no gender, but I do feel closest there. And I'm able to connect and think and clear my mind and be open to accepting thoughts and ideas when I ride. It's a whole different experience. I'm just free to move and not think or think depending upon where I'm riding, what the traffic is. And it's an entirely new experience for me. And that's how I've kind of associated my spirituality with my God as a church. And it doesn't have to be in a building for me. It doesn't even have to be inside at all. For me, did the feel of that road just running underneath me and the breeze in my face and the sun beating down on my shoulders. That's where I find my church. That's where I'm closest to my God.
So I'd like to introduce you to my uncle, Scott. Scott lives just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, where I grew up. And we lived right near Lake Erie. Scott still lives there. And he does a lot of sailing and has ever since I was a little girl. So I asked if he would talk to us about how he finds a sense of belonging and growth and safety and inspiration out on the water, sort of like some people find in church. Scotty, why don't you tell me about your experience in sailing and what it does for you?
Okay. So I started sailing when I was probably about 6 or 7 years old on a sailing kayak. And we'd go every summer to my uncle's cabin in the Adirondacks. And we'd knock about on the kayak, which had a sail. It's called the Clipper Arias. And that's where I really first was introduced to sailing. And when I got a little bit older, my brother and my dad and I built a 10-foot sailboat called a mirror dinghy. And that's really when I got into it in a big way. And we learned not only how to build a boat, but also subsequently how to sail it. And it was my very favorite thing when I was a kid doing that. Got to take the boat camping on weekends and race with other people, learn how to sail it. And it was a great community experience with others that have the same boat that we're racing them. When I got a little bit older, we ended up buying a bigger boat, 26-foot boat, Pearson Ariel. And my dad and my brother and I would sail that, would race it. And every year we do an overnight race from Cleveland to Clinton Bay, the islands in the western basin of Lake Erie. And that was just an amazing experience. We did it for about 15 years in a row. Sometimes we'd have big storms. More often than not, we'd have a storm. We'd get big waves. We'd get lost. It was prior to having GPS. You had to navigate using the old-fashioned ways, using charts and triangulation. And it was just a fabulous way to bond with my brother and my dad and find a real sense of exhilaration on the water in the outdoors.
So we're talking what age here? You were how old during the race?
When I started, I was probably about 7 on the kayak, maybe 10 or 11 when we built the mirror dinghy, and then about 12 when we bought the bigger boat and started racing and sailing the bigger boat.
And so you've been through many boats since then, correct?
I have had numerous boats, both small and large, from kayaks to canoes to a small laser sailboat that I also raced.
And you've even made it your profession, correct?
Yes. More recently, it's become my livelihood. I worked running a nonprofit environmental organization for 29 years that I ran and founded. And when we closed up shop, I got my captain's license and have been using that for the last 2 years to make a living.
Now, I want to hear about what you find when you're out on the water that you identify as kind of the church-like temple, a place of worship and praise and connection and belonging. How do you relate that to your experience sailing?
Well, I find myself closest to the divine or the spiritual when I am in the outdoors. That can be in the woods, it can be hiking, it can be skiing, and it's especially true when I'm sailing. There's something about sailing that grounds you in the moment. You have to be very alert to the weather conditions, the wave conditions, the wind, storms that might be approaching. So you're very much focused on the present. And I think when you're focused on the present, it's like a portal to what I think of as the divine.
So one of the aspects of a place of belonging, kind of a church-like atmosphere that I'm hearing through many people, is that it makes us present in the moment. And I'm hearing that from you. But another aspect of that atmosphere is a safe place to grow, where we're challenged and inspired to be more than we were when we entered that place. Do you find that in sailing and out on the water or being part of a team?
Very much so. Sometimes I sail by myself for fun. Sometimes I sail with friends for fun. And often, and generally on weekends, I race sailboats with a team of people. And I think the beautiful thing about sailing, as is true of so many disciplines, is that you are constantly challenged to learn more. You're presented with situations you've never been in before, and you have to figure out how to respond to them. And in the process, you learn new things. The art of learning how to sail, the basics of learning how to sail, I can generally teach to somebody in about a half an hour. But you can take an entire lifetime learning the true nature of the sport. There are so many different dimensions, whether it's learning about weather, about how waves affect the boat, how to utilize the equipment to your best advantage, or how to work well as a team with others. Sailing is just always challenging your knowledge to go a little bit further.
I love that because I use a sailboat analogy in my 12-step program to picture the Serenity Prayer. And I think of the Serenity Prayer asking for the courage to change the things I can, being the courage to change my sails because I can't change the waves and the wind. And letting go of that, and instead of fighting it, working with it and adapting to it so that I can experience the serenity that it provides. Have there been moments in sailing during a race or out on the water where you feel like you're fighting nature a little bit? And can you talk about that?
When I was younger, we'd get into situations, maybe a storm, where you'd be very frightened, and it was like a struggle to survive in the midst of that. You might have also, when I was younger, been in a race, and it's still true, where you get very frustrated because you do something wrong, and suddenly the other boat gets ahead of you, and you're trying to figure out why. More and more as I get older, and this is part of the beauty of growing with this sport, is that I do my best when I just let go. And I ground myself firmly in the present. I don't look back. I strictly breathe deeply and try to figure out how to make the most out of the moment that I'm in. And generally, when you're in that space is when you're doing the best, either competing or maybe trying to survive through a difficult circumstance that might be caused either by a storm or weather or big waves.
And I don't think I need to point out how that applies to our life and how storms come in and out of our lives and our relationships. And that I think that applies in any place that we are present. That letting go and stopping fighting against what is. And as you said, being fully in the moment and making the best of that moment. Oh, I love it, Scotty. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate it. And I can't wait until you and I get out on the water again.
I look forward to it, McCall.
You want to tell us about your where we could find you online or what your charter is?
Sure. I have my own sailing charter company. I take out groups of six or fewer, and it's called Cleveland Sailing Charters, and we operate right offshore from the city of Cleveland, downtown Cleveland.
On Lake Erie, right?
Yeah. It's clevelandsailingcharters.com.
Excellent. So you could introduce other people to being in the moment, Tom.
I love doing that. And usually what I do is when I'm teaching is, you know, there's a lot of terminology and there's a lot of technical talk around sailing, and I try and reduce it to the very basics so that people can be more a part of experiencing the act of sailing rather than thinking too much about it. When you're thinking about it, you don't sail well. When you just let go and you experience it, you do very well. And one analogy I use is blind sailors. I've taught blind sailors in the past, and they do very well because they are completely feeling all the subtle changes of the wind and the motions of the boat, and they learn much quicker in many cases.
So please go check out my uncle's webpage, and if you're anywhere near Cleveland, book a charter trip with him out on Lake Erie. Thanks again, Scotty.
You betcha, McCall. Look forward to it.
Hearing my uncle tell me that he had taught blind people to sail made me think of Unboxing God Episode 1, where I spoke to a deaf friend of mine, Greg, to find out if people who are missing a sense in some way are connected deeper to God, which is something I've always wondered about. If you haven't heard other episodes of Unboxing God, now would be a great time to go back and binge. Also, I know it sounds liturgical, but please rate, review, subscribe, and share this podcast. Word of mouth is how podcasts get around and become successful. And I'm really enjoying doing this and want to keep doing it. So Become part of the community. Share your voice. Share the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. My name's McCall, and this has been Unboxing God. See you next week.